Mr. Chairman, these are historic times. After decades on the fringes and in opposition, this party leads unionism and it leads the administration at Stormont. And in 6 months' time, we could be critical to the formation of the national government as well. It's only once in a generation that events and electoral arithmetic conspire to put unionists at the centre of politics, not just here in Northern Ireland, but in the United Kingdom as a whole. Mr. Chairman, we may be on the verge of just such a moment. If I'm sure of anything in politics, it's that this party is the only party to lead Northern Ireland through the challenges that lie ahead. In the past 10 years, only this party has had the measure of dealing with the government as well as dealing with nationalists and Republicans. There is no other party with the strength, the experience, and the political acumen to succeed. We can all remember what it used to be like when Republicans ran rings round the Ulster Unionist Party. But that's all changed. The DUP's in charge, and we are here to stay. Today I want to set out the case for continuing to entrust the responsibility for speaking for Northern Ireland at Westminster to the DUP and explain why every vote and every seat will matter next May. But first of all, I want to congratulate all those who were elected to the new super councils last May. Even though our poll-topping assembly members and MPs who had previously stood in council elections weren't permitted to stand this time, we came through the elections with more councillors than any other party, and we remain Northern Ireland's largest party in local government. At the same day, in the European election, Diane Dodd secured a tremendous result. In May, she was rewarded for her hard work with over 40,000 more votes than she received in 2009. And importantly, Diane also increased her percentage share of the vote as well. Diane came through a crowded field and emerged as a leading unionist candidate by a considerable margin. So on behalf of this conference and our party, let me say, well done, Diane. For this party, the issue that unites us above all others is our belief in the integrity of the United Kingdom. I ask you, who would have believed a few decades ago that the real threat to the breakup of the United Kingdom would come from Scotland and not from Northern Ireland? We very warmly welcome the democratic decision of the people of Scotland to maintain the Union and secure the United Kingdom for future generations. From this platform, I want to thank those who campaigned for the Union in the independence referendum last September. And I'm today delighted to be able to say in relation to Scotland as well as Northern Ireland, the Union is safe. Yeah. In recent years, we have taken great strides, not only to secure Northern Ireland's place within the Union, but also to create the sort of society which supports the constitutional position, and now we have seen how that has grown. Just a few years ago, Sinn Féin's President Gerry Adams boasted there would be a united Ireland by 2016. But instead, support for the Union is now even greater. Gerry, your day won't come. Gregory will give you an Irish interpretation of that later. This year marked the 100th anniversary of the start of the Great War, and I was honoured to represent Northern Ireland at the National Service of Remembrance in Glasgow. It was also a great privilege to be in Normandy for the 60th anniversary of the D-Day landings on the 6th of June. Both these occasions were reminders of the heroism of our troops, not just in the past, but in the present as well. Whether it was on the battlefields of France or Belgium a century ago, or across the globe today, our troops deserve our support. I know I speak for every single person here when I say that we will never forget them, nor the sacrifices that they have made and continue to make. I thank them for the work that they do, and trust that we will remember them not just on the 11th of November each year, but each and every day in our thoughts and our prayers. We must never forget what they have given, and we must honour their memory by making the country that they fought for the very best that we possibly can. Mr. Chairman, once more we face into a Westminster election. Every election is a choice. It means making a decision about which party and which candidate can help make life better. Sometimes politics can seem distant and remote. That's not the case in Northern Ireland. Making politics work means ensuring that the peace that we have is sustained. It means tapping into the potential for a prosperity that has been building up for years. It means trying to achieve reconciliation between our communities. It means creating a shared society where the culture of every tradition is treated and respected and given tolerance. It means providing life opportunities that ensure that our children don't have to leave our shores to make their lives or raise their families. It means protecting the fundamental rights and freedoms of all sections of our society. And it means people being liberated from the fears and perils that blighted the lives of so many for so long. Northern Ireland is a better place than it was 10 or 20 years ago. And I tell you, it'll be a better place still in 10 years' time. I'm proud of what we have achieved. Although we have more to do, the quality of life here in Northern Ireland has vastly improved. We're attracting global investment and international events in a way that was never contemplated before. I want to see us building on that progress. Stormont has achieved much, but it is not delivering on its full potential, and it needs to be improved. Coming out of St Andrews, we recognised that the present arrangements could only be temporary and they would need to be upgraded. We are involved in that process at present. In September, I said what everyone knew. The present institutions are no longer fit for purpose. We are not prepared to sleepwalk into financial catastrophe, but we wanted to face up to the real challenges that existed. That's why we asked the government to convene talks so that these key issues could be settled. We set the agenda and others followed. The primary and most essential function of government is to use available funds to provide the best possible services and facilities to the public, while at the same time boosting employment and growing the economy. This may be done in the context of balancing the books. And there is no party better than the DUP at doing this. However, too often we are inhibited by other parties from achieving the very best of outcomes. Under DUP leadership, Northern Ireland has reduced its unemployment level to 6%, and the claimant count has reduced for 22 consecutive months. Our jobs created totals are at an all-time high and not equaled anywhere else in the United Kingdom. Just look at the record we have at attracting foreign direct investment. Just look at the number of jobs that have been created in recent times. Our policies and strategy are working. Recovery is underway. But sadly, people are not yet experiencing this recovery because at the same time, we have a diminishing budget due to the spending cuts which are being imposed by the Treasury. Those reductions are likely, I believe, to continue right up to and including 2020. To balance the books while still protecting those vital services, we need to reduce the size of our 212,000-strong public sector. We're not talking about compulsory redundancies. We are offering a voluntary exit scheme. However, in order to maintain and hopefully increase overall employment, it becomes necessary at the same time to grow the private sector. And the only realistic way to do this is to reduce our level of corporation tax, encourage investment in the private sector with the consequent employment lift that you will get. This process is known as rebalancing the economy. It's what countless economists and politicians have for years been advising for the Northern Ireland economy. It's our policy, and it's the only one that makes sense for the future. So whether it's in relation to corporation tax, agreeing a budget, the talks process, the DUP is the party that is providing the solutions. In a few weeks' time, I hope that the government will finally announce that we will be given the power to set our own rate of corporation tax. This would revolutionise our economy. It would create perhaps as much as 50,000 jobs and build prosperity for years to come. The devolution of corporation tax was also supported by other parties when the process commenced. But as time passed, one by one they gave up and fell by the wayside. Not because they didn't want it to happen, but because they lacked the faith and resolve to make sure that it would. Oh yes, they've all returned to the fold now that positive movement can be seen, but only this party stuck with the campaign and refused to give up the cause. When others lost their will and lost their way, the DUP keeps going. When some said that the powers wouldn't be devolved or urges to move to Plan B, we pressed on. It's called DUP grit and determination. Mr. Chairman, let's take on the unionist begrudgers, those ones who tell you that we would be better off under direct rule. Just ask them, do they want to pay water charges, face 10% annual hikes in their rate bill, and stand helpless while direct rule ministers remove all the financial advantages that Stormont has provided and that Westminster does not? And Mr. Chairman, remind them that it was not one, but two direct rule administrations that were prepared to operate the scandalous OTR scheme behind our backs. And if they ever tell you that we'd be better off with direct rule ministers, remind them how in the past it was those same direct rule ministers who almost on a daily basis were making concessions to Republicans. That's why it's essential that devolution remains in place. But it has to be able to deliver for the people. We're also setting the agenda with the reform of Stormont structures. At a time when public services are being squeezed because of Westminster cuts, it's the view of this party that politicians should give a lead by downsizing the political structures as well. For over a decade, we have led calls for fewer government departments, fewer assembly members, provision of an official opposition, a new arrangement for the executive and assembly. Others have come late to these positions. Some are even posing as if they had invented the policy. I want to see more normalised form of government at Stormont. The present of all arrangements make decision-taking difficult and cumbersome and slow. We need to improve the mechanisms for decision-taking and remove blocking processes in order to allow the Assembly the ability to decide issues rather than having them vetoed in the executive. At the end of the talks process, we want to see a slimmed-down, lower-cost, smoother-operating, delivery-orientated and more democratic Stormont. At the core of past agreements was a central requirement that everyone respect and show tolerance for the culture and traditions of others. The violation of that central principle by Sinn Féin, the SDLP and the Alliance Party when they tore down the Union flag at City Hall triggered a slump in working relations at Stormont. That breach was compounded by the failure of Republicans to accept the right of Orange men to complete a 5-minute walk to their own hall after a 12th of July parade. The DUP is bound together with other unionists in seeking to re-establish the right of assembly and procession for the Ligue Éanil and other Orange men. As we move forward, the imperative must be to restore that essential respect and tolerance principle. There will be no resolution of the parading issue on any other basis. Today, the DUP is the only party setting the political agenda in Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin's focus is on the South. The SDLP and Ulster Unionist Party are focused on survival. That's why it is the DUP that must set the pace. In the Assembly, in terms of private members' bills, it is our Assembly members who are making the running. I have become increasingly alarmed at the uneven pitch upon which rights and equality issues are being played out. More and more, the balance is tipped against people of faith. This has been recently demonstrated by the treatment meted out to the Ashers Baking Company. I believe in freedom of conscience. There will often be competing rights and freedoms, but nobody should be compelled or coerced into supporting sanctions or promoting views or opinions which strongly conflict with their strongly held religious convictions. That's right. The publicly funded Equality Commission has launched an unjustified attack on a small Christian family business. This is simply bullying. I contend that the Equality Commission is seeking to use the Ashers case to add a further layer of restrictions on Christian behaviour and practice. Ashers are on the front line of this combat. We mustn't leave them there to stand alone. That's why I'm asking that a special collection be lifted at this conference to help them with their legal costs. Those who believe in freedom of conscience must stand strong and they must stand together. Now, I'm not going to tell you how much you have to put into the basket, but when you fold your money, it will be greatly appreciated in the legal battle ahead. Our colleague, Paul Given, will shortly be launching a consultation on a proposal to provide for a conscience clause in relation to aspects of equality legislation for those who have strongly held religious beliefs. As a general principle, I believe that people should be protected by law from discrimination, but that cannot mean that the sincerely held beliefs of Christians get trampled underfoot by everyone else, for that too is discrimination. I also want to take this opportunity to thank and congratulate our party chairman, Maurice Morrow, or Lord Morrow. I want to thank him for his Herculean efforts in bringing forward legislation on human trafficking and exploitation. This legislation has been a mammoth task and puts Northern Ireland at the forefront of the battle against modern slavery. Having listened to some of those who have been caught up in this misery, I'm certain that his efforts have been worthwhile. I have absolutely no doubt that in the months and in the years to come, there will be many who will owe their life and freedom to Maurice's determination to see this bill through. This bill is not only testimony to Maurice's ability to bring together a wide range of interests to support a common cause and his preparedness to work for the greater good, but it demonstrates that the Assembly, working as it should and working at its best, it's not every politician that is able to make a mark that will stand the test of time. But in bringing forward this bill, Maurice has secured his place in history. We have also proposed a bill to introduce a pension for severely disabled victims of the terrorist campaign. These brave individuals and their families have suffered and still continue to suffer the dreadful legacy of violence. They didn't have the same opportunities to work and contribute to pensions or national insurance. This has placed many of them in financial hardship in their later years. The consultation on that bill has finished, and we are moving forward to introduce the legislation. It will provide a special pension for those who are most deserving of help. But, Conference, this bill will explicitly exclude terrorists from receiving this pension support. In recent times, we have managed to approve a draft budget, advance the reform of local government, and agree new structures for education. Here, too, we have an example of political parties working together at Stormont, cutting deals and compromising in the best interests of the community as a whole. I believe if we get the structures of government right, then so much more could be achieved. That means being prepared to reach out in the spirit of compromise. It means taking the long view and seeing the bigger picture. It also means taking difficult decisions. Those within unionism who oppose the path upon which we have embarked have nothing to offer. They complain more delivery is required, and at the very same time, they argue that we shouldn't cooperate with Sinn Féin. They seem incapable of recognising that the mathematics, never mind the structures at Stormont, means that there is no delivery unless such cooperation takes place. Of course, we will oppose Sinn Féin when unionist interests require it. We have shown that we are tough and we are determined, but we will work with them and with others when it's in the interests of the community that we do so. Even after difficult and contentious political times, I want to build bridges. I want to build those bridges with political opponents for the benefit of the people of Northern Ireland. But I can't build bridges from both sides. There can be no one-sided deals. There needs to be a serious willingness from Republicans to engage and to compromise. If that exists, this party won't be found wanting. But we will never betray our principles or sign up for deals out of political expediency. That's why we said no to the Haas proposals. They weren't in the interests of unionism, nor were they in the interests of Northern Ireland. Mr. Chairman, next year at the Westminster election, the question will be simple. Who can get the best deal for you and for Northern Ireland? Sinn Féin talks tough, but they don't even take their seats at Westminster. so they won't be players when the national government is being formed. The SDLP, because of its link to the Labour Party, have no cards to play. Their votes are already in the Labour column without having extracted any price. As for the Ulster Unionist Party, well, they're not even on the Westminster radar. However, the DUP's record of getting the very best deals, regardless of who is in government, is second to none. We worked with the last Labour government, and we have worked with the present coalition in the interests of Northern Ireland. That's real delivery. Delivery that helps the people and isn't simply in the interests of politicians. That's where we differ from our political opponents. 5 years ago, the Ulster Unionist Party linked with the Conservative Party. It was roundly rejected, leaving the Ulster Unionists without a single seat in Parliament. Yet they believed that that link would be the panacea to all of their ills and would lead them back to Westminster in greater numbers. How quickly they discarded the Tories after the election. Whereas once they lauded their relationship with the Conservative Party, today they prefer to pretend that it was all just an illusion. Well, they may want to forget it, but I suspect there will be some of us who will make sure that when any Ulster Unionist complains about cuts to public services, they will be reminded that these are the cuts that they advocated during the last Westminster election campaign. Their minister, Danny Kennedy, has the bare-faced effrontery to complain about the impact of the very budget cuts that he, as an Ulster Unionist Party candidate, advocated in his party's 2010 manifesto. He stands embarrassed in the dark, with the grass growing up to his knees, the victim of his own appalling judgment. The Democratic Unionist Party got it right. But we are all in Northern Ireland paying the penalty for the Ulster Unionist Party getting it wrong. Right. A senior political commentator recently speculated that after the Westminster election, the DUP could be in a powerful position. Listen to what he said. They would exact a high price, but they could provide a pathway to power. So what test would we apply? Unlike the Ulster Unionist Party 4 years ago, it's not places in the cabinet that we would seek. We ask nothing for ourselves. We want outcomes that will benefit all of our people. We're not seeking to be part of any government coalition, but with an open mind, we are willing to sustain in office a government that offers policies and programmes that are in the best interest of Northern Ireland in particular and the United Kingdom as a whole. We'll be responsible in our approach and we will use our influence wisely. It's still almost 6 months until the election and there's growing uncertainty about the outcome at a national level. But it's looking increasingly likely that no single party will be able to form an administration. Indeed, it's not even clear if any two parties could form a government. If that's right, then every seat will count. A seat here or there could be the difference between providing a clear majority and falling just short. It could be just that close. That's why it's so important to not only retain our existing seats, but also seek an increase in our representation. This isn't just an opportunity for the DUP, but for unionism as a whole. It would be a real tragedy if unionism lost out because of split votes and spoiler candidates. It goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. I want to see all 8 of our serving MPs re-elected and returned to Westminster. And it'll come as absolutely no surprise if I tell you that our number one target is to gain East Belfast. Yeah. I want to see East Belfast back in the Unionist column at Westminster. And there is only one Unionist candidate who can win the seat, and that's my friend and colleague, Gavin Robinson. Yeah. Gavin's a former Lord Mayor of the great city of Belfast. He has a proven track record in successfully delivering for the people of East Belfast. He is an outstanding, he is an exceptional candidate. Now, everybody knows that this election will be a simple choice in East Belfast between the Alliance Party and Gavin standing in the interests of unionism. That's a decision that the people of East Belfast will have to make. There may be other unionists in the field, but they would only serve to divide the pro-union opposition to the flag-lowering, parade-stopping, gay-marriage-supporting, pro-water-charging, holier-than-thou Alliance Party. Yeah. Well, that's the election campaign really started now. But our ambitions will extend beyond East Belfast for Games. And I'm not opposed to extracting and entering into issues with other parties. I want to have an electoral pact in the interests of unionism and in order to maximise unionist representation at Westminster. This party has a long and proud history of being prepared to put the interests of unionism ahead of its party ambitions. Across the province, we will have candidates asking for your support and your vote. The choice is clear. If you want a party that will stand up for Northern Ireland, if you want a party that will stand up for unionism, if you want a party that can deliver for you and your family, then the DUP is the best option. The prize at a Westminster election has never been greater. The DUP is not just the right choice to represent Northern Ireland. We are, in fact, the only real choice. We are the best team. We have the strongest candidates with a history of delivery and achievement, as well as the experience and ability to succeed. The DUP is best placed to serve your interests. We will always put Northern Ireland first. Just 14 years ago, this party had 2 members of parliament. Today we have 8. And after the election, I want us to have even more. We didn't get to where we are by sitting back and taking people for granted, but by working for every single vote. That's what we must continue to do. And always remember that every single vote does count. Don't forget that in 2010, Michelle Gildernew was elected to Westminster by just 4 votes. So when the canvass comes and you're tired and you feel like packing up for the evening, just knock one more door or do one more street, because it could be the difference between victory and defeat. It could be the difference between success and failure. It could be the difference between the DUP holding the balance of power at Westminster and narrowly missing out. The stakes couldn't be higher. The opportunities couldn't be greater. As we go out from this conference, let's focus on the pivotal role that this party can play. You can be sure that nationalists in Scotland will be doing all that they can to serve the interests of independence and of Scotland. We must do all that we can to make sure that the interests of unionism and Northern Ireland are served at Westminster. But we can only do that with a mandate from the people. The journey that this party started all those years ago continues. The greatest tribute that we can pay to Ian, who set this course, is to complete the journey. The DUP grows from strength to strength. None of us could have foreseen what we've already achieved. The size and strength of this party was unimaginable a generation ago. But we're not done yet. The job isn't finished. There is so much more to do and to achieve. We will face unforeseen hurdles and challenges, but we have the people and we have the talent to face the future with confidence. So next May, with your help, let's write the next chapter in our history. Let's build on what we have already achieved. Let's strive to go even further. Let's not only win, but deserve to win. And let's send back to Westminster a team that will truly be standing up for Northern Ireland. Thank you very much.